There's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
This spill is holding everybody hostage, not only economically, but physically.
Our commitment is to work with the communities and societies of the Gulf Coast.
I'm on a tightrope, man. You know?
Doing the work that needs to be done.
So on Monday morning, we peer forward into the week and see what's setting the agenda. The Takeaway and WNYC's economics editor, Charles Herman, joins us. Charlie, this week, in your view, is all about what?
Angst.
Angst. I was noticing, since we've been talking, the futures went from being up to mixed. So, yeah, they're listening
Charlie's
to Charlie
right
there.
They're That's listening.
Right. Finger on the pulse of the world, Charlie.
Also, Todd Zwillick is with us, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Good morning, Todd. This week, in your view, is all about what?
This week is about watching the women, John.
In the primary contests?
Absolutely.
Indeed. Well, let's start with Charles Herman. So, Charles, we had some sort of negative numbers at the end of last week. We're looking towards the retail numbers at the end of this week. Where do you see the angst, economically speaking? Is it all here or abroad?
I think what you're seeing right now is that consumers are losing steam a little bit in their purchases. We saw in May some earlier reports that consumers were not spending as much. And when you look at this one poll that comes out from ABC News that looks at people's confidence in the economy, about 90% of Americans are still negative about the economy. So that really shows that people are perhaps not as inclined to go out and spend. And when you have these jobs numbers that came out last week that showed that the private sector is really not hiring people at the pace that people would hope, Americans may just be cautious to go out and spend money at this time. I think there's a little bit of angst there.
And it's hard to be a believer in the recovery when you hear all these headlines about the way of life is changing in the Gulf. The seafood industry is going to have all sorts of problems forever. When are we going to see measurable costs, if at all, in the economy from what's going on down in the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, right now we're right in the middle of it, so it's a little bit hard to tell exactly what sort of economic cost could happen to the entire nation from what's happening in the Gulf. While it's clear that there could be some environmental impact, or definitely some environmental impact, the economic one is not as clear on a nationwide scale. The first place that we would probably see something maybe is in oil prices and gasoline prices.
But that's they're down this morning.
And that's really reacting more to what's going on in Europe than it is specifically down in the Gulf, because it's not really a Katrina-type event where you have refineries offline and tons of oil production offline. What the administration has stopped is future drilling, so those wells that are still pumping oil are still pumping, so gas prices haven't been that affected.
What about seafood? What about shrimp? What about lobster?
Well, let me just interject. I was talking to the owner of my local seafood shop over the weekend, and he said, yes, they get seafood from the Gulf. At the moment, they're still getting frozen stuff, so it's a delay. It's a lagging indicator.
There's a little bit of a delay, and there's also the fact that a lot of restaurants could eat the prices, because in a time where consumers are hesitant to spend to raise the prices, consumers may not come to that restaurant.
I was also noticing in some of your reporting, Charlie, that on the tourist side, if people cancel a visit to one place in the Gulf but go somewhere else in the U.S., there's no net effect on the economy. So the tourist thing is really hard to calculate.
From a national perspective, yes. But from a local perspective, I mean, those hotels could really be suffering, and the businesses down there, the tour boats. One person, though, who does not seem to have angst is Jimmy Buffett. He has a hotel that's opening in Pensacola, the Margaritaville. And he is planning to open that hotel on July 1st and hopes that people can continue to come down there.
He's also been down at the Gulf, very active in aiding the cleanup effect. And I know he's part of it.
Well, speaking of people who need to position themselves as being very active in the Gulf, Todd Zwillick, the Gulf crisis is certainly on the agenda for the White House this week. Is it being on message? Is it photo op or is it substantive?
It's both, John. This is a White House that is now in sustained crisis mode. On Thursday, you're going to see the families of the victims of the 11 men who died on the original explosion on the Deepwater Horizon rig come to the White House for some public and some, I'm sure, sincere sympathy from the president. Before that even happens, today the president starting his week off meeting with the cabinet for a Deepwater Horizon briefing with the entire cabinet, a briefing from Thad Allen, who's, of course, in charge for the president, Coast Guard commander down there in the Gulf. So White House starting the week with BP, ending the week with BP, bookended between crisis and sympathy.
But on Tuesday, there's some pretty intriguing primary races coming up. You said it's going to be all about watching the women. What races are we talking about, Todd?
Absolutely. Now, there are primary races across the country, but the big headliner races, the interesting thing to me, there are Tea Party implications implications, party purity implications. We've been talking about those things. But the interesting thing to me is that all the big races we're watching are all involving women candidates. The Arkansas Democratic Senate runoff. Now, this is a runoff between incumbent Blanche Lincoln against a guy, Bill Halter, who's a state official down there. Lincoln, of course, won the primary, but she didn't get 50%. So they're in a runoff. Lincoln's in trouble. The unions are way behind Halter. They are flooding that state with money. Move On is way behind Halter. They're angry at Blanche Lincoln for not supporting the public option and for not supporting pro-union legislation there. In California, you've got
Hold on. Before we leave Blanche Lincoln, let's listen to her complaining about the impact of out-of-state money. Here she is talking on CNN.
So my opponents had tremendous support, not to mention the fact that 60% of his dollars are coming from MoveOn.org. The largest contributors to his campaign are residents of California, not Arkansas.
Well,
so
I'm
up against a lot.
Is that true?
Well, there's definitely a lot of outside money in that race, John. There's no question about it.
And it's being spent in Arkansas, not in California, where there are some pretty significant races going on, too.
Big races in California. Meg Whitman, former CEO of eBay, is in the California gubernatorial primary against Jerry Brown. Remember him from the 70s? Jerry Brown is back. Now, he's the Democrat. Meg Whitman's not fighting him yet, but she's going to win this primary, and she's going to wind up running for governor against him. And also in the Senate race, Carly Fiorina, a former CEO, this time of HP, is in a Senate Republican primary against a guy named Tom Campbell, another state official. This race has been great. If you Google Demon Sheep, Demon Sheep 2, and Demon Sheep 3, you'll get a sense of what this race has been like.
Really, the rhetoric in this race. But is the story on the GOP the emergence of sort of tech millionaire women like Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina?
In California, that's certainly what it's all about. Across other parts of the country, it's still about women in the Tea Party, women conservatives. There are high-profile women candidates all across the country. South Carolina, you can just read all about it. It's an amazing year for them.
Todd Zwillick watching the women and Charlie Herman looking for the angst in the economy. That's the agenda. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.